Welcome to the Urban Complex, a system of interrelated, emotion-charged ideas, feelings, memories, and impulses. This name takes the definition and lays out what a listener should expect. A podcast where ideas, feelings, and memories collide, leading towards meaningful change. I'm co-host Chris Richardson. Please enjoy the journey with the Urban Complex. Smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow.
All opinions by Chris Richardson, Dominic Poppin, and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Arizona State University, the Arizona Department of Education, or the Arizona Commerce Authority. Any endorsement of or messages from sponsors are solely supporting the production of this podcast. There is no relationship further than podcast purposes with any sponsor unless separately created with another entity. Enjoy the Urban Complex. Smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow.
All right, Chris, here we are another week. How are you? What's top of mind for you this week?
I know how disappointed we were when we didn't get the chance to go see Artie and meet all the folks at Smart City Expo Atlanta. It was just kind of a tough time, and I understand completely why that happened. It was just nice yesterday. You and I were on stage, as we would have imagined back in Atlanta, here locally in Phoenix, talking about the themes of the urban complex and then answering questions about that and answering questions about our respective organizations. It was just a lot of fun to be back in person and talking about what we're learning. I know we're having a lot of fun doing this podcast, and just it was cool to see the excitement from the audience about what we're doing here. So I don't know. That's what's on top of my mind.
Yeah, no, that was such a fun experience. And yeah, you're right. It felt good to be back in a, you know, crowded, maybe not crowded, but a room full of people excited about smart cities and to talk about stories, especially stories from all of our amazing guests that we've had so far. So it was fun. I'm looking forward to it. I'm hoping I actually get to go to Smart Cities Connect in DC in a couple of weeks. So hopefully that can.
Oh, nice. Have you booked travel for it?
I have. Yeah. So hopefully.
Oh, exciting.
We can just continue the momentum there. You know, fingers crossed it all goes as planned. So who's our guest this week? Who are we talking to? So
we have Karen Rogers. I didn't know her before, but we've heard so many of our guests talk about data, and I know how important a great data layer is, and GIS seems to be the place that it happens. And when I was doing some research, she seems to be one of those out there doing amazing things with GIS. So I just found her on LinkedIn and said, hey, we need to take data one level deeper, and that's it. So I don't know, anything that you've seen?
No, I love it. GIS seems to come up in conversations more and more and more and more with everything around smart cities and urban planning and urban design. So I'm really excited to talk. I don't think we've had anyone from Wyoming before either. And so this will be great to have her in. So we can bring her in.
Let's do it.
Here we go.
Support for this episode of The Urban Complex comes from Worldwide Technology.
What if we could connect people to new possibilities, turn thinking into a way forward, solve problems before they become a problem, and share the future with everyone? We can. At WWT, we connect businesses to technology to make the impossible possible, to reach better decisions faster, to accelerate progress. Together, let's make a new world happen.
All right, Karen, please let Dom and I give you a warm welcome to our podcast, The Urban Complex. Thanks for joining.
You bet. It's a pleasure to be here.
Cool. Well, we find that the best way to get rapport quick with our guests and our audience is just to start about yourself. Tell everyone kind of who you are and a little information about you and what you're doing.
Great. Thank you. So it's funny, being a map maker, that the path that has taken me to get where I am has been so circuitous. And so allow me to tell that story. So I am a fifth generation Wyomingite. I grew up here in the capital city of Cheyenne, and went to school in Laramie at the University of Wyoming, graduated with a degree in anthropology, and started my career off as an archaeologist, studying Paleo-Indians, so the earliest Americans, humans in North America. And so a few years after graduation, I moved to a tiny town named Pinedale in the western part of the state. And so Pinedale's tiny town of population of about 2,000 people, and it's surrounded by public land managed by the Bureau of Land Management or the U.S. Forest Service. And it was there that I got on as an archaeologist with the BLM. And that was when I got my introduction to collecting data with GPSs and bringing that data into GIS and making maps and, you know, doing all kinds of fun things. And I just fell in love with the technology. And so the more I did, the more I learned, the more I was intrigued by it. And I just made the conscious decision to switch my career to be a full-time GIS specialist for the BLM. And so at that point, for years, I helped, you know, collect data on all the natural resources that we managed between grazing allotments, range improvements, raptor nests, sage grouse licks, you know, I mean, you name it, and oil and gas development features, to be able to model and analyze the potential impacts to those natural resources from human activities, primarily oil and gas development. And so it gave me a great appreciation for good data and documented data and data standards, so that, you know, the same data can be used and built onto and used for good decision making. And so I did that for years. And then after I had my first child, decided to leave the workforce and be a stay-at-home mom. And so for 5 years, I was.
Did you name her Lucy by chance?
No.
Being an anthropologist.
No, my son is Miles, though, for all the miles that we were going to go. So.
Oh, well. That's weird.
And, but so during that time, you know, I kept teaching karate, as you noted, is kind of my side job. So I was a stay-at-home mom for 5 years while teaching karate. And then when I re-entered the workforce, I had moved back to Cheyenne, got a divorce, started over, and I got on with the state then as a GIS developer. Now at that time, I didn't know anything about software development. I didn't know hardly anything about computer science. You know, I was a social science major. And so they assured me that they would train me. And so the first year, I just took that time to learn everything about computer science and information technology that I had never known before. And it was a great time. I just fed my brain and just read and read and read and took copious notes. And my mind just started racing about, you know, knowing what I knew about GIS and where technology was going. It was just like, holy cow, this is just amazing stuff. And so the next year I was promoted to be the enterprise GIS enterprise architect. And a month later, I was introduced to NISGIC, the National States Geographic Information Council, and just an amazing group of people among whom I realized how little I really knew and how much there was yet to learn and to know and to do. And so I did that for a few years. And unfortunately, the CIO at the time didn't quite appreciate GIS. And so he got rid of my position. The bright side of that is I got to go to the Wyoming Game and Fish Department after that. And so,
by the way, earlier referencing BLM, I'm assuming that's Bureau of Land Management.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So yeah, federal early on. And then when I went to Game and Fish, that is with the state, and just love that job because, you know, such local roots to, you know, what makes Wyoming great and, you know, my passion for open spaces and nature. And during that time, I had the challenge of data wrangling. And so going back to, you know, data from disparate sources and bringing it together for the common good of managing sage grouse, which are, you know, a bird that we're trying to keep from being listed as an endangered species. And so I learned a lot about, you know, more about data and how it's used between state and federal permitting systems and impacts to the private sector and economic development and, you know, just all kinds of fun stuff. And then in June of 2020, I was able to come back to the IT department and basically get my old job back.
So COVID brought you home, huh?
Yeah. So it's very gratifying. And, you know, I mean, this is just my dream job. I said it 8 years ago and I'll say it again. This is just my dream job to be the state GIS coordinator for my home state, because I just believe so deeply in the power of the technology and, you know, the beauty of my state and the challenge of balancing our natural resources with economic development and, you know, just making good management decisions. And so, you know, again, all that to say, I think it's might be amusing to some people that this, you know, country hick is on an urban podcast, urban complex podcast. But to me, that, you know, the reason is, or the justification is, I have this unique perspective about, again, managing natural resources in a balance of, you know, human needs and economic development, and to balance that out and to use our resources wisely. And it all comes back to where. Everything happens somewhere. And the question is where and at what scale and what overlaps there and how you manage those resources and make good decisions.
Well, such great background. We're excited to dig in. Before we do so, you only reference it 1 second. I think it's kind of an interesting story I saw on your LinkedIn profile. So did your black belt expertise in karate help you with data wrangling? Tell us. And it sounds like you're like not just a black belt, like you're at the pinnacle of something, and I don't understand it. I'm glad we're doing this remote. I don't want to be in danger. But so what's your black belt expertise in?
Well, so I've been practicing the martial arts for 30 years now.
Oh, wow.
And it's just crazy. I am a fifth degree black belt now. It goes up to 10 degrees.
Oh, okay. So you're not that good. You're just okay. I'll still stay over here in Arizona, though. I'll tell you.
To your point, though, you know, my martial arts training has certainly taught me discipline. Yeah. And, you know, it's that mental jujitsu of, you know, trying to figure out your opponent's weaknesses and, you know, work.
Well, it sounds like you had a vision at BLM, at Bureau of Land Management, needed to come full circle to get there. So let's assume that our audience knows nothing about GIS. Let's start there. So set the stage. What is GIS? You've kind of alluded, but why do you think it's important? And what should our audience, you know, that are mayors, city managers, CIOs, CTOs, resiliency officers, so to speak, what should they be thinking about their own GIS efforts?
It's such a great question. I'm glad you asked. So GIS stands for Geographic Information Systems. And so that still may sound like blah, blah, blah. And so we can break it down. So geographic, of course, is geography. It's features on the surface or below and above the surface of the earth. So if you think of, you know, a lake, a river, a road, campground, you know, those are features on the earth that you could represent with, you know, a blob and a line and a point. The information is, you know, rather than seeing just those points, lines, and polygons, when you click on those features, you get information about them. So you can click on, you know, that lake and see that its name is Fremont Lake. It's over 600 feet deep. It's a glacial lake. It's got two boat docks and, you know, it's in the state of Wyoming. If you click on the road, you can see the name of the road, what surface it is, who maintains it, how many lanes, that kind of thing. If you see the campground, you can click on it and it tells you what campground it's in, if it's for tents, RVs, drive-throughs, if it has a fire ring, if it has water. You know, so behind every feature that you see, there's an attribute table that tells you all kinds of information about those things on the earth. And so with that information, you structure it logically. And, you know, the system refers to the technology that we use now through computers to represent the world in a two-dimensional box. And so that's, you know, in its very simplistic form, what GIS is. GIS is the technology that runs everything that we do on our phones now. And it's just the technology that we take for granted. You know, everything you do on your phone is driven by geospatial information. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when you want to see, you know, when your phone tells you where you are, that's using satellite technology and coordinates to show where you are. It knows that you're in Sam's Club. That's how it knows where your friends are. And when your friends invite you to come to the local brew pub that they just found, how you navigate to that brew pub. And if on your way, you get in an accident and you have to call 911, that's how the dispatchers know where you are and how to get to you. It's all GIS. And I'm, you know, it's just.
It's mixed with a little GPS though, right?
Well, GPS is just one tiny part of GIS. So GPS is global positioning system.
Right.
So that's just the satellite technology that triangulates your location. You know, that just is the latitude.
GIS is the features that it all comes together with and puts you on that spot you physically are.
Right. So GIS has been around for 50 years, you know, in computer world, you know, maps have been around for a long time, forever. But GPSs have only, you know, they were developed by DARPA and in the military, and they were only made commercially available with, you know, good accurate location.
Ironically, my friend's uncle was founded Trimble Navigation. So kind of
no kidding.
All right. So let's steer into, there's a major player there, Esri. I believe they're the leader. I'm assuming that's what you use in Wyoming. Anything to share about what Esri's doing for the movement in GIS?
Esri is an amazing company, and they certainly have the corner of the market.
Esri, if you're listening, time to sponsor the podcast. You're already here.
That's right. A lot of us admittedly have a love-hate relationship with Esri because, you know, because they're the big guys, they, you know, just, they dominate everything, but for good reason. I mean, they make an amazing product and they put a lot of money into the research and development end of their product. So yeah, they do good stuff.
That's awesome. So Karen, you know, you mentioned it a little bit in the introduction about kind of, you know, how your work relates and balancing kind of your interest in open space, but obviously the need for economic development. So, you know, this is a podcast about smart cities. As Chris mentioned, we've got a lot of city managers, CIOs, CTOs, even state officials listening. So talk to us a little bit about your perspective of smart cities or even a smart state and how your work fits in to that kind of, you know, your perspective of what a smart city is. Because I really liked what you mentioned at the beginning, this idea of balance, because it seems that's going to be really important to you and kind of your thoughts on this.
Well, it should be important to all of us. Yeah. And so, yeah, in thinking about this, I boiled it down to how I think a smart city is defined by a three-legged stool. So one leg is that the local government is using technology to improve its internal operations. So, you know, it's collecting data and having those data available to everyone, you know, securely and appropriately. But so everybody comes in knowing where things are. And can make good decisions based on where things are in relation to other things. And so, you know, think asset management. So somebody coming in knows where all the street signs are, the bus stops, the benches, the, you know, underground utilities. And that's important when you're digging new lines for fiber optic lines. So you don't cut something, you know, you're going to be less prone to make those mistakes if you know where those resources are, or can build upon them and make them even better. And, you know, when government can do that, then they're spending taxpayer dollars more wisely and just building their operations more efficiently. And so some examples are, like I said, underground utilities, but, you know, using road data for accurate routing so that you're cutting fuel costs, you know, to cut fuel needs for that local government and so on and so on. So that's one leg. The other leg, another leg is local government is using technology to improve the lives of its citizens. And so, you know, basic function is parks and rec. And so, you know, every city maintains parks and green spaces, but now we should look at it through the lens of environmental justice. Are they doing it equitably? Are they, you know, using demographic data to look at, you know, disadvantaged communities and make sure that they are putting in green spaces in those areas, you know, across the board? And, you know, tree canopy, same thing. I saw statistics a few weeks ago in LA County that, you know, white neighborhoods have 25% canopy cover, whereas brown and black neighborhoods have like 5% canopy cover. I mean, it's just a dramatic change, and that affects people, you know, it has direct impacts because of climate change and again, environmental justice. Other examples of that are public safety and elections. You know, if the government is using their resources wisely and, you know, sharing address data, then they can administer elections better. They can administer public safety better. And, you know, that's what government should be about, is making the lives of citizens better. And then the third leg of the stool is local government is using technology to improve the natural resources within and in the periphery of that city. And, you know, no city is a bubble unto itself. I mean, there in any city, there are pockets of the natural world and, you know, nature. And, you know, certainly there's the periphery where it's very permeous. And I think that, well, I have some statistics. So by 2050, the urban population alone will be larger than the current total world population.
Wow.
Yeah. And so it's incumbent upon cities, you know, cities are going to be the drivers of how we respond to climate change. And cities are going to be the ones who make or break getting ourselves, the world, out of this, you know, hopefully out of this crisis. And so another example is water conservation. So 2.1 trillion gallons of water is lost every year due to aging or leaky pipes. So if you have, so if you have smart water mains, you know, you're able to conserve that water. Like about 15% of what's treated daily is lost through leaky pipes, which is
just, you estimate 14 or 15%, you said?
Yeah, 14 to 18% of what's treated is just leaked every day. Wow. And there between 700 and 850 water mains break each day in the United States. So again, if we have smart water mains, you know, the smart technology to manage and maintain that, then we're going to conserve a lot of water, use it much more, you know, wisely, and that's good for everyone. So to me, that's how it all comes together. And it all comes back to where, you know, where things overlap. And that's that much more complicated in cities because there are so many things overlapping. And then when you interject time in that space, you know, then it just, I mean, it just makes your brain explode just thinking about all that. And then again, modeling all that through GIS is just, is the power of that technology.
Oh yeah. What a great perspective, Karen. I absolutely love that kind of mindset that you approach smart cities with. So you've talked a little bit about, you know, what GIS is, and you've talked about kind of, you know, your approach, your mindset to smart cities. So now talk to us about, what are you doing? What are you doing with GIS for the state of Wyoming? What sort of services are you providing to other agencies or to the residents? Talk to us about some of the, you know, the stories and what you're doing in your job.
So I'm just really beginning with what I'm doing with my job. You know, again, I've been in this role for just over a year and we already have CIO turnover. And so, so we're just getting going and, you know, getting clear direction and support to go in those, go down these paths. And I think up to now, most of my impact to the GIS profession has been really outside of Wyoming because of, you know, thanks to my involvement with NISGIC. That said, you know, I take deep pride in connecting the Wyoming geospatial community. You know, we joke that Wyoming is a small town with long streets. And, you know, again, going back to, you know, the irony of Wyoming is, you know, our biggest city is 65,000 people. And so, our whole state population is not even 600,000 people. So, you know, I think speaking of scale, for me, we have to think of Wyoming as one big smart city, you know, or like you said, a smart state. And so how do we make that case and how do we convince our local governments to consider this technology and consider that it's worth their while to put it to use, given, you know, financial constraints, you know, local expertise constraints. You know, we've always done it this way. Why do we need technology to do it this way? And, you know, so I think there are definite barriers and things to work through. And so
how do you connect the community? That's kind of an interesting topic there because, you know, I'm assuming other cities might find value in how they can interact with the state agency, how they can interact with whoever else you're connecting. Tell us about who you're connecting and how you do it. That's kind of an interesting topic.
So Wyoming is a very red state. And so we have a lot of that mentality of, you know, we don't want Big Brother telling us what to do or, you know, coming to save the day. And so there definitely is that struggle to work through it. And so I can't, you know, so it has to be more of a local driven, we need help with this. And one of the ways we're seeing that cry for help is through next generation 911 technology. And so that's definitely an area for you to look into, you know, for a later topic. But next gen 911 is the 21st century approach to public safety that is based on, you know, an IP network, but also geospatial data for call routing and for getting resources to the right place. And 911 is based on 50-year-old technology. And so our local communities are seeing the end of life of their systems and the end of life of their technology. And they're like, hey, we have to do something. And, you know, they finally recognizing that it's better to work together to solve this problem than to keep doing it in our own little stovepipe and, you know, just keep our head in the sand. So, you know, there are still holdouts, but that is one way that really the primary driver right now of how I'm able to communicate with our local governments about address data, road data, you know, various jurisdictional data. And so that's one way that we're getting a lot of traction lately. Another way, going back to my game and fish days, is just permitting, you know, and economic development. I mean, when a city needs a new water treatment area, but it's in sage grouse core area. How do they put that development in without, you know, bumping up against development rules and, you know, air quality laws? And, you know, I mean, there's a bunch of permitting that has to happen that, you know, again, goes back to spatial data and where things are and how we share that data so that we're making the best use of everyone's time.
Yeah.
That's great. I saw that you recently, you referenced, I think you called NISIC or something, National States Geographic Information Council. Seems very collaborative. What did you bring away from the experience? Any great stories that you're hoping as you get the leadership direction that you think cities and states are doing with GIS data?
Yeah, so NISGIC, again, the National States Geographic Information Council, they are just the most amazing group of people. Like I said, I went to my first conference a month into my job the first time, and a friend of mine has a saying, you don't make friends, you meet. You don't make friends, you meet them. Or God, no, I'm screwing it up.
Sounds right. It makes sense.
I knew that NISGIC were my people. You know,
yeah, exactly.
They are just my people because we're just passionate about what we do. And so this annual conference was no change. I mean, it's the highlight of all of our years. Highlights for all of our state members and sponsors who are our partners in, you know, what we do. It's just the highlight because we just get invigorated and inspired by all of us. And this one was particularly interesting because it was a hybrid. So we had about half the people in the room and half the people, you know, back at their work desks, and it worked amazingly well. And yeah, GIS people are just known to be good at collaborating because you never have in any GIS project, you never have all the data that you need for that map or that analysis. You always have to find, you know, who, if, you know, so if I'm in Game and Fish and I'm making a map on mule deer migration corridors, I don't have road data. You know, that's not my expertise. So I have to go to YDOT and get road data. I have to go to DEQ and get, you know, injection well data, you know, what have you. So GIS people are by nature very collaborative and very much problem solvers. And so that's what NISGIC does. And again, we see ourselves as the conveners between the federal government and our state local government GIS users and try to, you know, convey messages back and forth between those scales. And so one of the efforts that NISGIC has been working on for the last few years, one of our big advocacy efforts is working with wayfinding companies to get authoritative data into their feeds. And so, you know, Google, TomTom, Apple Maps here, those types of companies. So how do we, you know, how many of you have used Google Maps to try to get somewhere and they send you down the wrong path, or, you know, you have the address, but they said no such address exists. And you're like, I know it does. Well, you know, I mean, we joke that it's automagic that stuff works, but it's not magic at all. That is based on data that local governments create and maintain. And so how do we get that local data into the hands of these huge companies at a timely cadence so that they're navigating you the most efficiently and accurately that they can?
Yeah.
And so we've been working with them and, you know, we're getting there, we're making progress, and it's just incredibly exciting because that's, you know, again, a real world benefit. You know, we can't expect citizens to come to state websites and get our address data and road data. That doesn't do them any good. They're interacting with our data the most through these commercial companies. Boy. And that's just cool.
Yeah. That's, I love that story. I love the fact that it's such a collaborative group. You're like naturally prone to have to work together. And so you have this mentality of collaboration and partnership. But then, yeah, the intersection with the private sector, you're right. We take it for granted, but that's, you know, natural in kind of the work you're doing. So, you know, Karen, as we were doing some research, we saw on, and I'm sure this is going to lead into this question, is we saw you mention location intelligence. So can you talk to us about what that is and why should public entities, public sector be kind of excited or interested in location intelligence?
You bet. So data is data. Maps are maps. Yeah. You know, I mean, that's pretty flat. It's only when you put that data in the hands of people to do something with it, is it location intelligence? You know, it's putting data in the hands of not only GIS developers, but non-GIS developers, you know, getting data together through APIs and explaining to people, this is how you can use this data to build intelligence. And again, to build better decisions on, and to show people, you know, I mean, the power of GIS is that you can see patterns and relationships and trends that just you don't see through numbers and spreadsheets. And so by simply, you know, there is intelligence in simply making a map, but then the cartography, and again, using the time stamp and seeing trends through time, that's where we get intelligence. And that's, again, where I'm so excited with where technology is now, is, you know, just the Internet of Things and sensors and real-time data. And, you know, it's overwhelming. It can be overwhelming. And that's the challenge, you know, again, of GIS professionals like myself, is how to make it make sense through space and time. Mm. And again, being able to inform decision-making and improve the lives of our citizens.
Yeah, it's so incredible. And I think this is even going to lead into this one, not to put you on the spot here, but, you know, what can you tell us? What's the future hold for GIS? I mean, it seems like it's an incredible technology that has a lot of upside and a lot of potential, but I don't think it might not be being leveraged to the degree it can, just because maybe of awareness. But what can you, if you had to say, you know, what do you think the future of GIS holds? Talk to us about it. What do you think?
Another great question. And so one of the things that has been so fun to be a part of in NISGIC is, for the last few years, we've changed our, instead of strategic planning, we've gone to a strategic direction, strategic thinking. Mm. So we are using foresight to look ahead, so that, you know, we're not predicting the future. We just don't want to be surprised by it. And so we're looking at all possible scenarios and looking at, you know, extremes of, well, this could happen on one end, but this could happen. And so how do we, you know, kind of do what we can to steer things this way? And so what we see, definitely, you know, we know autonomous vehicles are going to impact us like we can't even predict. And autonomous vehicles work, you know, again, they only work because of geospatial data. They only work if they have good address and road data to navigate them where they, you know, the driver, passengers want them to go. And that's also based on LiDAR data, which are, you know, 3D data that the cars are collecting or are collected beforehand to make that path and make the map of where how that cityscape is. So autonomous vehicles, I think, are just huge. And again, state and local governments need to be prepared to provide better information to make that technology work. Other areas that just intrigue the heck out of me are urban planning and digital twins, you know, and building information management. I mean, BIM, all that stuff, just, you know, again, modeling the 2D world, the 3D world through our 2D boxes. But yet technology now is making it so that you're seeing the 3D world in 3D through this box. And it's just mind blowing how far this technology has come and what it can do, again, to inform our decisions and weigh impacts of different choices and, you know, inform solar panels, you know, rooftop solar. And, you know, if we have all these here, but if we build something here, it's going to impact. And, you know, again, just making good decisions. And another area that we're talking more about is underground utilities and mapping underground utilities. And I think, you know, doing that through data standards so that those data are available across the board. And I meant to look this up, but, you know, so many hundreds of people die every day in accidents from underground excavations because they don't know where things are. And so when we can save lives and, again, just make our limited resources go further.
I guess underground utility mapping will also help with your water observation earlier with the leakage and being able to get to where those leaks are happening quicker and whatnot too.
Yeah, and try to prevent some of those and improve them. And yeah, and we should be prepared to map those new water mains as we replace them. You know, hopefully the new infrastructure bill gets passed and we get to put a lot of new infrastructure in, and hopefully we're planning for the future by mapping those water mains, you know, the first time.
I always found that amazing that, you know, some cities had no idea where their assets were. Even the above ground ones, they don't know how many streetlights they had. They don't have, you know, it's just.
They really find out quickly when someone's doing construction.
Find out the hard way.
Right.
No, this is incredible. This is great. So we do have a couple standard questions, and this one's kind of a new one. What help do you need to do more? I mean, Dom and I, we've realized that part of this podcast is bringing people together. If they're listening and someone has a solution, or another city or state's done it, or maybe a vendor partner has done it, we're happy to open doors, share what we can. But yeah, if someone who's listening, what is it that help you need from your role where you see that you can share?
I think one thing that would be very beneficial is really working to document the return on investment and document the success stories, you know, at whatever scale, but particularly, you know, I think to get buy-in from smaller towns like I have, you're going to need to have that ROI and show the reason why this is in our interests to adopt this technology. And that, you know, ROI is something that the GIS profession has always struggled to document that well. And so I think that's incumbent upon, you know, people who are trailblazing in this space to really collect that information and make it available and, you know, blow your horn, but be willing to, you know, find ways to share those stories, because I think that's how we're going to tip the scales to see more people adopt it.
Really good point. If you don't have leadership buy-in, you can't get moving. And then you can't do the great things that you know can be done with this technology and with the data. So, and the final question, is there anyone you're particularly appreciative you'd like to recognize publicly that's helped you along your journey? And ideally for us, if they also kind of have a Sart City mindset of you've learned about us in the urban complex, whether they'd be a good fit for the show?
I can think of three off the top of my head. So one of them is Frank Winters. He's the GIO for New York. And he just came, he's now past president, and he is just, I mean, he and I are peas in a pod. We're just very high energy, you know, always shooting a million miles an hour. And he's a hoot to talk to. So he would be a good one. Cause again, he's, you know, true urban perspective. Another one is Bert Granberg. He is the Wasatch Front GIS coordinator, and that's not his exact title, but Bert has a very unique perspective and he's doing amazing things in the Salt Lake region. Mm-hmm. And he's past president of NISGIC. He used to be the Utah state coordinator. So he's just always fascinating to talk to. And then last on my list is Jamie Chesser. She is the NISGIC director of geospatial programs. And she's been leading this program for the last few years that I mentioned, but it's called geo-enabled elections. So the idea being using address data to audit your election rolls, your voter registration rolls, and make sure that people are, you know, based on where they live, that they are registered to vote in the right precinct, that they're getting the right ballot, and that candidates are registering to run in the right precincts based on where they live. And then just using that data to help administer elections so that, you know, elections are run well, and that can only raise, you know, confidence in government, confidence in democracy, and, you know, streamline results. And, you know, and then it, for
district, we shouldn't trust Facebook to run our elections.
Probably not. Yeah.
That's incredible.
So there's, cool. Yeah, there's just so much. And again, it all comes back to data. And making that data common and available and usable.
No.
Wow. Yeah, everything does come back to data, doesn't it?
It goes back to where. Everything goes back to where.
I love that point.
Yeah.
Well, with that, the Urban Complex gives a big note of thanks to today's guest, Karen Rogers, Enterprise GIS and Data Visualization Coordinator, State of Wyoming's Department of Enterprise Technology Services. Thanks for joining us, Karen.
Thank you guys so much. Thank this you. Was a lot of fun.
Yeah, this is great.
Take care.
Support for this episode of The Urban Complex comes from MST.
MST is a Salesforce certified integrator. We work on building customer experience solutions and deploy them for our customers. As we started evolving, our why also continued to evolve as a company. Over the last 3 years, The whole approach was really revolving around what we call three C's, which is customers, colleagues, and community.
All right, Dom, that was Karen Rogers, GIS. We got a little thing or two about data. What'd you think?
Yeah, I feel a lot more informed now about GIS than I was before. Karen's awesome. I mean, what a great leader, what a great story, and what great passion. You could just see her passion and how when she came into the field, all the research she did, she self-taught, she self-learned, and she's really starting to apply all of that now into her work and her job. And I don't know, it was just something kind of really motivating about, knowing that there's people out there like that are really excited about data and the technology and how they can put it to use to help better cities, states, or even things like game and fish and open spaces and preserving the balance between open spaces and economic development. And I just found the story and her path to where she got just incredible.
Yeah, and she really made it relevant of why this work is so important. Things that were becoming commonplace, like Google Maps, Apple Maps, like they wouldn't exist if these states and cities didn't have great data sets. And so, I thought it was really cool as well, not predicting the future, but we don't want to be surprised by it. I thought that was a great quote she shared. And she really had some interesting things that she's thinking about. Autonomous vehicles won't happen without good GIS data.
Exactly.
We know we're starting to get into the digital twin world, and that can't happen without a great data layer to make it relevant and important. So you start to put together all the things that she mentioned. You know, when you have Internet of Things, when you have sensors, you have that real-time data, you can layer it in with a GIS data layer where you can dig deep. And then you have these unique commercial outcomes of these engagement ways to consume the data or do, unique things like an Uber experience or, Waymo here in the Valley. It just changes the world. So it does come back to data. That's for sure.
It does. It does. I mean, I would just laugh about how many applications or things we use on a daily basis that's actually pulling that sort of data in order to, build the application or run the application. I'm sure it's way more than any average consumer could imagine. I also love this natural proclivity to collaborate with GIS. Like, hey,
totally. Birds of a feather are going to come together, right?
Right.
Data nerds unite.
but it makes sense because it's like she's like, when I was at Game and Fish, I had this data. I don't have road data, so I naturally have to go get the road data. And I guarantee you, when she reaches out and asks someone for help or data, they say yes because they understand what they're trying to do.
Totally.
Whereas I think in other professions, it's
and they're not competing with each other either.
Exactly.
It's like state of Arizona's data person isn't competing with state of Wyoming for sure. And you know they only probably have one within an entity because it's just tough to scale. And a lot of that came out.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's great.
I did
get super jazzed when she was talking about one of the folks, I think it was Jamie Chesser, and this geo-enabled elections. I think that was like, whoa, that is an amazing thought of how to make that come to fruition. So we'll see. I mean, I don't know. That just got my mind going.
Yeah. No, Karen was great. I'd love to have her back on, here in a couple months to see where she's been able to push. And I also, maybe last comment is, while she has the passion for it and she can see the importance of the data and the use cases and how it can be leveraged, she's still having to play like an educational role for cities to say, this is why this is important, right? And so I wonder, and I think that's, it came out in her ask of,
yeah, totally.
We need to help telling why this data and why GIS is so important so other cities adopt it, so they spend money to invest in it and things like that. I think we need more Karens telling their story, right?
Well, and we need to help Karen get the approval to do the amazing things that they're thinking about, right? That was where working to document the ROI. People need help with those business cases, whether it's a data, whether it's GIS tool, whether it's to get a person like Karen on board to do the amazing things that's happening. I mean, that's totally so critical. And I thought it was a great ask too. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Great guest. So Cracks in the Pavement, what do you got for us this week?
Well, I smile. I was excited for this one. It's one we don't even need to read the announcement because you have a little something to do with it. But, headline, regional consortiums create one of the largest U.S. smart city networks. Talk about congratulations. Seven regional smart city consortiums teamed up to form the National Smart Coalitions Partnership. What a great story.
I mean, it really just builds off the podcast. I mean, we realized, you know, in building the smart region here in Greater Phoenix and then, you know, the smart region down in Greater Tucson, that there was so much incentive and you know, so much awesomeness about just coming together and sharing best practices. And what are you struggling with? What are your challenges? Where are you focusing? That we realized that there are other similar organizations throughout the country that we naturally talk to a lot, have been guests on this podcast, like Jen Sanders in Dallas.
Yeah, you kind of broke a little bit that you were doing that. We work with North Texas Innovation Alliance, and then you were talking about Colorado, and now you got seven of them, right? You got Illinois Smart City and Region Association, you got KC Digital Drive, the Southern Arizona Smart Region, which I know you've been very involved with as well, and the Regional Partnering Center, and then Smart North Florida. I mean, talk about it. So it's almost coast to coast.
I know, it's exciting. I think when we were counting up the number of kind of cities it touches, it's well over 100 cities.
Wow.
Through the consortiums. And so, again, it's exciting because it goes back to what we just talked about with Karen. It's not a zero-sum game, right? My smart region is not really competing against Jen's smart region or Aaron's smart region in KC. We're all just trying to help.
Their economic department groups might think differently.
But ultimately, we just want to build better cities where we all enjoy to live, work, and learn, right? And so I think this idea of getting together, sharing best practices, again, it goes back to the reason why we started this podcast. We learn better from stories. And so if we can come together and share regional stories of innovation, it's just going to help all of us.
I think that's why it's not competitive, is because people realize, just like there's no one answer to smart cities, if there was, then it would be competitive because people would want to just do that, right? But everyone's kind of creating their own secret sauce around what their city is or what their state is that's uniquely them. That's great. But when you can share these best practices and you can scale quicker and you can make the tech seamless where it's not even noticeable and you still allow your secret sauce to come to the forefront, that's real innovation, that's real collaboration, and that's exciting. So
exactly.
Great work.
We're excited about it. I mean, think what Karen said about the water issue. Like if someone solves that in Phoenix, we better spread that because water is a vital resource.
You got 100 cities connected to kind of learn what the idea is and figure out how to make it happen. That's great.
Yeah. So that's the goal. So we're excited. And as I mentioned, we might be talking about that in DC just a little bit as well. So it'll be all fun. Right.
Well, good luck with that.
Yep.
Well, cool. With that, that's a wrap. We'll see you next week, all. Thanks.
Yeah. See you, everyone.
Thanks for listening to The Urban Complex, smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow. Please find us on where you listen, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. We do love your feedback. Let us know if you have ideas for guests or questions to air on Cracks in the Pavement via social media. The Urban Complex is found on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. Or just shoot me an email, chris@theurbancomplex.com. Till next time.